Hello and welcome to the podcast edition of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews on books, movies, music, and collectibles on the national pastimes. These podcasts feature interviews with authors, artists, musicians, and filmmakers. You know the slogan, if it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. As mentioned in a previous post on the Baseball Bookshelf, Arnold Hanno wrote one of the most must-read books for any serious student of the national pastime. A Day in the Bleachers was the first, and in many ways the best, of the single-game analyses series. His deconstruction of the first game of the 1954 World Series between the New York Giants and Cleveland Indians was published almost immediately after that fall classic, and has been reprinted many times, an indication of its popularity and status as a classic. A 2006 edition, published by Orion Press and illustrated by Mark Ulrichsen, sells for $700. Willie Mays' catch off the bat of Vic Wirth is a standard fare on baseball highlight shows, but Hanno was there firsthand to chronicle it for future generations, and all without the benefit of instant replay. The chapter alone is worth the price of the book. Well, maybe not the $700 price of the Orion book. Hanno is an award-winning newspaper man, and his freelance work has appeared in numerous magazines, including Sports Illustrated. He wrote biographies on superstars like Sandy Koufax, Roberto Clemente, and Mays, as well as juvenile sports fiction. Hanno also taught writing at the University of Southern California, Pitzer College, and the University of California, Irvine. I had the pleasure to speak with him recently about the decision to write A Day in the Bleachers, and whether such a book could be done in the amusement facilities that serve as modern ballparks. Hanno, 90 years old, will receive the 2012 Hilda Award at the Baseball Reliquary Shrine of the Eternals 2012 Induction Day on Sunday, July 15th, beginning at 2 p.m. at the Donald R. Wright Auditorium in the Pasadena Central Library in Pasadena, California. The festivities will include the induction of the 2012 class of electees to the Shrine, including Dr. Frank Jobe, Jim Mudcant Grant, and Louis Tion. For further information, contact the Baseball Reliquary by phone at 626-791-7647 or by email at terrymar, that's T-E-R-Y-M-A-R, at earthlink.net. And now our conversation with Arnold Hanno.
Arnold Hanno, welcome to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Thank you.
It's amazing that you could just go to the Polo Grounds for the first game of a World Series and just buy a ticket. Did the idea come to you just on the spur of the moment?
It came to me the spur of the evening before. I said to Bonnie at supper time, I think I'll go to the game tomorrow. And she said, you won't get in. And I said, well, I'll try. And so that was the way it was.
It's amazing because nowadays it's unfathomable that you could even think of doing such a thing. How did you keep track and document what happened that afternoon?
Well, I bought a program, which was the equivalent of a scorecard, except it cost five times as much. And I had a copy of the New York Times with me just to pass the time. But then I would use the gutter of the Times to make little notes. So between the program and the Times and my kind of leaky memory, I just had it all down.
Now, you say the program cost five times as much.
I think it cost 50 cents as opposed to a dime.
And what was the price of the ticket?
I think it was $2.10.
And that's for a bleacher seat. What would the most expensive ticket have cost in those days?
Oh, dear. Probably a box seat might have run $4. You laugh.
Yeah. For $4 these days won't even get you a bottle of water at the ballpark.
Will it get you a hot dog?
Nope.
So that's another thing. I bought a couple of hot dogs and I had a couple of beers and I think I had a cigar and I think I got out of it for another buck.
Now, it's funny, you mentioned cigar. Obviously, there's no smoking these days. But in those days, people pretty much dressed up to go to the ballpark, didn't they?
Well, they did, because a friend of mine on the West Coast said, I suppose you wore a fedora. And I said, I've never worn a hat in my life, except for the years in the Army. So, but people do wear hats, and some wore jackets and ties.
And the women wore dresses and gloves.
The women the one woman that I had my argument with during the thing was dressed as the way I was dressed.
Now, it was a stroke of luck to be at a game that featured one of the greatest moments in baseball history, Willie Mays' catch. That bit of film is played all the time on TV and in clip shows, and it happened today, it would be constantly shown. But back then, what was the reaction?
What was the reaction to the catch at the time?
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't feel the pulse of my fellow neighbors. It was exciting. The throw was great, but the game continued. You know, now we had a man on third with one out, and the game tied. So it was a great moment, but it was a passing moment. Maybe later on it could become a lasting moment, but right then and there it's just a passing moment.
Well, if it happened today at the ballpark, they would show it on the Jumbotron, the scoreboard, over and over.
Uh-huh. You would see it. You would see it until you counted the laces on his shoes.
I was thinking how awful it must have been for anyone who might have been in the bathroom or at the concession stand while that happened.
Yes, I think so, too. To me, an interesting shot of that is something that I think the Daily News had a shot of the bleachers and the ball being caught, and the only person over on the right field side that could see it was a little boy who lifted his head in between the bottom of the bleacher screen and the fence, and he was looking at it. He was looking down. All the others were looking straight ahead. I wonder who that boy was and what he remembers today, if anything.
Yeah. So when did you decide to turn the marginalia and your program notes into a book?
I don't know. Well, I thought maybe there's a magazine article here. The New Yorker would run, Ring Lardner would run them, other people would run full-length pieces on a ball game, a football game in particular, or a tennis match. I don't think they'd ever done a single baseball game. But I thought, oh, well, I'd try them. So I wrote it up as a 10,000-word piece, and I brought it down to the New Yorker, and I said, you have to tell me yes or no right away, because, you know, there's a time sense on it. And so the young man, I guess he's like a copy boy, he took it upstairs, excuse me, and he came back about an hour later with it and said, they liked it, but they said it's not right. I took it home and I read it, and it wasn't right. It didn't work as a magazine piece. So I thought at that moment, well, I can either leave it alone or I can see what else I can stretch it into. And I decided I'd try to stretch it.
And how long did it take you?
Well, all told, I think about 3 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I'm fast. My fingers are fast, and I didn't really. I didn't have much work to do. The game had been gone, and I had my notes, and I had my memories, and, you know, there was that.
And what was the reception of the book at the time?
Well, the first reception from my agent to a publisher was that it wouldn't work. He thought that Crown Publishing and Hiram Hayden, the editor, would like it, and he gave it to Hayden. And Hayden called and said, you and Hayden will come on over and we'll talk about it. So we thought that was pretty good. We got there and he said, I can't do this book. And we said, why can't you do it? Or I said, why can't you do it? He said, I don't know how to sell it. He said, this is a book that can't be sold the way sports books have been sold in the past. Mm-hmm. A sports book in the past was something a father bought for his son. And he said, this is not that book. And if I put it into the nonfiction area, it gets lost. So he said, I won't be able to sell it. And so that was very disappointing. But Sterling Lord, the agent, said, I'll sell it. And he sold it to Thomas Y. Crowell, who I don't think knew what to do with it either, because they asked me to write the dust jacket copy. Now, that a publisher doesn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they printed 5,000 copies, but bound only 3,500 of them.
Well, are you surprised over the years how it's come to be such a classic?
I'm surprised because I've always thought of it as a nice little book. My wife says it's a nice little charming book, but that's about as far as we ever thought it was. But the public says it's a, or not the public, but the cognoscenti seem to say it's a good book, and they've treated it that way. The book has never sold well. It sells steadily, but it's never been a bestseller or anything like that.
Well, I mean, it's been selling for over 50 years at this point, so it must be doing, must have some appeal out there, and certainly other authors have copied the conceit of focusing on one game, analyzing one game.
Yeah, and I haven't sued any of them.
Now, this book was written in 54, but some of the points you make are still valid today, and I just want to read a little passage. A Yankee fan is a complacent, ignorant fat cat. He knows nothing about baseball except that the Yankees will win the pennant and World Series more often than they won't, and that a home run is the only gesture of any worth in the entire game. And you could say the same thing right now.
Well, you could. I think they're less ignorant over the years.
But as far as the Yankees expecting to win the World Series and
that part is accurate and will be for the next 50 years.
You also wrote that you thought the tempo of the game had slowed down. This is in 1954. If that's the case, then. Do you still follow the game today?
Yeah, I follow the game. My eyes are lousy, so I don't go to too many games, but I watch it on television, and I have a reading machine. I'm looking at it right now, and I put the scorecard under there, and I see that Lincecum only walked two men yesterday, which is really the reason why he was pitching better.
So what do you think of the pacing, the tempo of today's game?
I think the pacing is too slow. Part of that is commercials.
Sure.
I remember seeing a ball game recently. Excuse me while I clear my throat. I hope that works. I guess no, not quite. Well, what the hell? You're 90 years old, and I'm allowed to have a frog in my throat. I remember seeing a ball game where the teams changed sides, and the pitcher is doing his eight pitches, and he was ready to go. And the second base umpire, who must have been the umpire in chief that day, shook his head no. He looked at his watch. It is still not time to have done all the commercials.
Right.
And so that's a. That's pretty disgusting.
Yeah.
Other things slow down the game, but I think they're speeding him up over last year. The batting gloves and the fussing with him slows the game down. And a batter who takes a pitch and then walks 12 steps down the line, I don't know what he's doing. Is he thinking? What is he doing? And then he walks back. And then he's got to refocus again, so all that takes time. When I saw ball games, Bill Terry stood in the box, and he'd take a strike or a ball or whatever it was, and he stood there with the bat on his shoulder, and he waited. This business of taking a walk to gather your thoughts, I mean, all you need is focus.
So what do you think of the Baseball Reliquary Honor? As a fan of the old Giants, do you have any misgivings that it's named for Hilda Chester?
Well, of course. I mean, a diehard Dodger fan is giving a diehard Giant fan an award. I mean, that's Hilda must be an attorney in her grave. I think it's very nice. You probably don't know much about the Reliquary. We're kind of an oddball, eccentric group anyway. We have, for instance, you know who Eddie Goodell is?
Sure.
We have his jockstrap.
Oh my!
So we gather things like that. We've been dickering with the Vec family for his wooden leg.
That wasn't buried with him?
I don't know. Bury it up, unbury it. So those are we are a quiet slap in the face of the Hall of Fame. That's why we call this thing the Shrine of the Eternals. I mean, that's just a. It's just funny, and we honor baseball the same way they do, but we don't take it quite as somberly seriously as they do. We try to find some of the oddball moments of the game that seem to make it just as good a game as they do. So that's the way we are.
Well, I mean, baseball is a game to be enjoyed, and that's the way it should be.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Arnold Hano, author of A Day in the Bleachers, which is celebrated more than almost 60 years now since it first came out. And Arnold will be honored by the Baseball Reliquary with the Hilda Chester Award for service to the game. Arnold, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Well, thank you.
And that was the bookshelf interview with Arnold Hano, author of the classic A Day in the Bleachers. Well, that does it for another podcast. Upcoming guests include Neil McCabe, who with his sister Constance has produced two wonderful coffee table books featuring the photography of Charles M. Conlon. We'll also be talking with Ronnie Joyner, author and cartoonist of Hardball Legends and Journeymen and Short Timers, 333 illustrated baseball biographies. Published by McFarland, this is a throwback to the cartoons that used to appear on the sports pages of newspapers many years ago. So remember, we love your comments and questions, so send to a new email address. It's ronkaplansbaseballbookshelf@gmail.com. Again, that's ronkaplansbaseballbookshelf, all one word, @gmail.com. Thanks, everybody. See you next time.